Blog Talk Radio.
Here it is.
Yeah, I once got to kiss Linnea Quigley on screen. I got a question.
We got an answer.
Well, is Red Snapper a fish or a turtle?
It's a vegetable.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that. First, I thought it was a turtle, then a fish. Finally, it's a vegetable.
Yes, it's a very nice vegetable. You got to eat it fresh.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So the bottom of the ocean, though, you got to go diving, and you got to grab it with your hands, and then you come up.
Oh, well.
You got to be careful for the view.
There was a man back in 95 whose heart ran out of summers, but before he died, I asked him, wait, what's the sense in life? Come over me, come over me. He said, son, why you gotta sing that tune? Catch a Dylan song or some eclipse of the moon. Let an angel swing and make you swoon. Then you will see. You will see. Then he said, here's a riddle for you. Find the answer. There's a reason for the world. You and I. Picked up my kids from school.
Tonight we want to let I'm already crying We want to let our dear friend John Link know how much we love him and we care for him.
John's in our prayers so much.
We got already a lot of people here. Let's do a roll call. We have William Brower.
Yep.
We have Tom Sawyer.
Right here.
And we do have John Link's best friend in the whole wide world, even though it looks like they fight on social media all the time, Mr. Edward X. Young.
Yeah, I've known John since, like 1994. And,
wow.
He's not just a friend. He's probably outside of family. He's the friend I've known the longest. And also, you know, he's the second half of our comedy team, you know. I mean, one critic once referred to us as the Alan and Rossi of grindhouse horror films, which I think is a pretty accurate description. John Link being in the role of Marty Allen and me being more of the Steve Rossi straight man type. If anybody remembers Alan and Rossi, they were great.
Your brother from another mother.
That's the 50s and 60s. Into the 70s. I mean, you know, Marty Allen just died recently. He was he was like 96, 97 years old. He was still doing stand-up to within like 2 weeks of his death. I mean, I was hoping, let's hope. I mean, John Link will bounce back and still be doing his routine.
I most definitely hope so.
Yeah.
We also have Brett. Brett, can you talk yet? Okay,
Was he stuck on mute or something?
No, I think he's setting up his equipment. So Brett will definitely be here. He's definitely going to be here. And we're going to have callers throughout the night. I know that. Let me just say,
You also have Tina on the phone, too.
Oh, yeah, Tina.
Oh,
Tina Ramos.
Tina. Yep, here I am.
And now we just picked up on J.L. Patello. And this I'm glad that J.L. called in because J.L., when we started Francie and Friends, J.L., he was the sponsor of the show. And we had a lot of fun together. And it was 12 years ago when another friend of ours, Edward, you know who I'm talking about, we'll just say John, messaged me and I said, I got you the perfect guest, but you got to make fun of this guy. He wanted it to be a joke. But after talking with John Link for just a few minutes, I was like, oh, hell no, I love this guy. You remember that, JL? John Link was one of our...
Yeah, and we were with Matt Siegel, too. Wasn't that the first show with Matt Siegel from Hell's Kitchen?
Hell's Kitchen.
He was
That's right. Maddie was the co-host of that. And he talked about how John Link talked about how he was drowning in one of his scenes, and he would not yell cut because he wanted the scene to be perfect. And they were said, John, you're drowning. What the hell's wrong with you, man? You should have yelled cut. And he says, I would have ruined the scene.
And, you know, I remember talking to Matt Siegel after the show. You know, him and I talked over the phone, and he said to me that he thought it was a joke that it was a fake person calling in, that we were playing a joke on him.
Because John was animated.
He's so unique and animated. He thought we were playing a joke on him. This wasn't a real person. So if you go back and listen to the interview, you actually hear Maddie Siegel being a little sarcastic to John. You know, thinking that he's being put on and this is all a joke.
I remember that. Yeah, and in fact, they actually developed a really good friendship.
Yep, they sure did. They sure did.
Yeah, I heard that opening segment. You know, I heard that opening segment, and you realize to this day, John Link probably still believes that a red snapper is a vegetable.
Actually, sounds like
yeah,
a venereal disease.
Yeah, we're gonna play that full scene earlier a little bit later. I want to play that. There's a lot more to that with the, we call it the 5 years of John Link antics. And in fact, the guy who was telling him about the snapper was another Hell's Kitchen contestant, which was Giovanni from the next season from Maddie at season 4. I loved his, oh, I thought it was a turtle. Yeah. His innocence with everything is, I believe that that's what got people to love him the most. And he's been, and JL, I will tell you this, John, we tried to do a couple of shows. John wanted to get his show started back up. And I made him a whole new Blog Talk Radio show page. And I guess Edward, you know the story. I guess he fell the first show. In fact, Brett was on there with you that show. And I believe we lost Brett, but I think he'll be back. Oh, okay, he's back.
I am back. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we
okay,
can hear you. Yeah, and Brett helped out with that show, and then we found out that John had fallen, and he couldn't reach his phone to call
well,
in.
This is tragic. You know, here's John Link, who everybody who knows John Link, he's a veteran of even he lost count. I mean, well over 100 grindhouse horror movies. We acted in at least 25 or 26. I tend to forget when you do that many. But here's John, a bona fide underground movie star, like the modern equivalent of one of like Andy Warhol's superstars. And in fact, John did work with one of Andy Warhol's superstars on the movie I wrote and directed and starred in, Two Guys in One Box. But John it's a great movie. John was apparently getting ill already and in danger, and not telling anybody he needed help a few months ago. I mean, John suffered a stroke. I know the exact date. He suffered a stroke on August 9th of 2018, and he was supposed to be he was in a rehab center for about 90 days. He was left paralyzed on the right side of his body, but he was making some genuine progress and coming back. So when the whole COVID thing started, that's what's really sad, is that as handicapped as John was, he was improving because he would drag his ass out to a horror movie convention or a rock and roll show or like an anarchist gathering in Tompkins Square Park of New York or any barbecue or dinner that you would invite him to. He'd make it there, but which isn't true. He wouldn't turn down a free meal. But unfortunately, with the COVID lockdown, he was left just stuck at home at the mercy of his brother, who completely neglected him and stopped taking him to his rehab, and his muscles atrophied. So, I mean, sadly, we had a show all planned a couple of months ago with Francie. It was still during the summer. It was in August. It was definitely in August because I remember I was still at Point Pleasant on their boardwalk. It was still open in full bloom. But what's so sad is that John didn't show up for his own show. And I discovered a few days later, because I was worried about him. He wasn't answering the phone. I discovered that he had fallen, literally fallen and couldn't get up, and was stuck lying on his back and his brother didn't come home for like, he was gone for several days. I mean, John spent well over 24 hours, I think closer to 48 hours, just lying on his back on the floor. It's terrible. And of course, this contributed to his gradual deterioration of his health, which has put him in he's in University Hospital in Newark right now in ICU, and he's been that way for the past 12 days. It doesn't look good, but I mean, his health has been deteriorating. It's very sad, but yeah, we had a show planned, but we didn't realize he was in a desperate situation. And if I'd known that in advance. Yep.
Edward, can I ask you, when you saw him last in the hospital, how long ago was that, and how responsive was he to inputs, to stimulus?
I saw him last night. And it was not good. Last time I saw him was about 24 hours ago, because I stayed at the hospital until 11 p.m. Eastern time. Right now it's shortly after 11 Eastern time, and it was not good. It was terrible. I mean, John was rushed to the hospital on Sunday, October 10th, and he was in a desperate situation then with severe double pneumonia. But since then, because of the neglect he's been dealing with, he's got a lot of bed sores. The bed sores have become badly infected, and he's got he's gone septic. Oh, yeah. What is terrible is Monday, 3 days ago, he opened his eyes for the first time in a week, in 8 days or 9 days, and he wasn't able to move, but his eyes were clearly lucid, and he was looking at me, and I was talking to him, and I put the TV on. I put on the Cartoon Network, but they told me that yesterday he was on the verge of cardiac arrest. He almost died yesterday, and when I saw that was 2 days ago, but when I was there yesterday, he was in a total deep coma. He was completely unresponsive. Oh. And had all kinds of tubes in him and all kinds of machines attached to him. So,
one thing that I really appreciate, Edward, is you called us and you let us talk. I knew I was going to have a hard time with this show because I love the little guy. You called us you put the phone up to his ear and you let us talk to him.
So he's, I knew I was, well, Monday I was putting some people on the phone because I visited him Monday and I visited him Wednesday, which was yesterday. And like I said, Monday he couldn't talk, but then again, he's intubated. He's at the double pneumonia. They're draining his lungs and giving him oxygen at the same time. And they told me, he would not be able to speak. It's impossible to speak if you're intubated because the tubes go past your vocal cords. But he was alert and he was responding to voices. I was hoping I could have got a hold of you on Monday because you especially for us, you have a very distinct voice, which is instantly recognizable. And I was hoping that you would have recognized your voice.
For sure, man. Oh, my God. Yeah.
But you know, they say people in comas can hear. And not only do they say that, I know it for a fact. Because I've dealt with people who have been in comas. I'm old enough to have been through that. A lot of friends or relatives, like, passing on. But people who recover from comas, no report, like I heard everything you were saying. Maybe they look like they're not there. They're already gone. But they come to, and they can recall the conversations they overheard. So I did have you up against John's ear last night. Maybe that was a more critical time because yesterday they said it was touch and go. And they were, that's why I stayed extra late. They weren't sure if he was going to make it through the night. He did. He did make it through the night. And a few hours ago when I called, they said, well, he's extremely critical, but stabilized. But he's totally non-responsive. So that's very disturbing.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt here in the conversation, but when we look at the situation, you were there with him in the hospital, and we are doing this show to hopefully maybe have him hear us. How do you feel about what we're doing now? And I know it's pretty dire.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, first of all, John is a bit of a claims to be an atheistic skeptic of everything, but I truly believe there's a lot of power in prayer and group love. There's a lot of vibes, if you want to go back to the hippie era and call it that. But the fact that he really valued his Blog Talk Radio show, which I think ran for 5 or 6 years. I forget the exact duration of time. And he often enjoyed Francie's show too. When I go back there, I'll play the archived show for him and hold it to his ear. He will hear this. I'll probably be back there Sunday. I'm really busy the next two nights. It's Halloween, and I work in horror films, and there are conventions and appearances, and it's a very occupied time for me. But I think I will have time to visit him Sunday night. And if it's archived, then I'll hold the phone to his ear and let him listen to the show.
That's why we decided to do this. And everybody that's here right now, this is completely last minute. When Edward was leaving from the hospital, we talked on the way, and we decided, let's do it. He doesn't have much time. Hopefully he has more time than we think. So let's do it. And then the next person I called was you, JL.
Right.
And I thought it was important. And this is one thing I wanted to touch on is my last conversation with John Link that over the phone was, I want to do the show. We got to get the show back on. And I said, yes, John, I'm here for you. I'll help you with the show. I'll run your switch for you. Okay. And he goes, I want to talk to J.L. Patello. I didn't suggest it. He said, I want to speak to J.L. Patello. So J.L., John's going to hear this show, and I think JL would, I think it would be nice if John Link heard your voice and maybe give him a special message.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, I want him to get better so we can do that show, because that would be awesome to do a show with him. It's been a while since him and I did some really serious Blog Talk Radio stuff, and it would be great. So get well, John. And let's do that show. So I'll be 100% on board when you do. So I'm here, man.
Yeah, in fact, you did say yes. I'll do the show. When is it? And John said this Friday, but then there was conventions and everything, and so that had to be postponed a little bit. But I thought that was really cool. Of all the people that he could have, he said, I want JL on the show.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
It was a big, really, seriously, you don't know what a big part of his life it was, the John Link Show, Francie and Friends, and Possum Hour. All those shows meant a lot to him. And like I said, it gave him a place to be on those particular nights of the week with the regularity. Let's face it, John acts in a lot of these movies, but anybody who's listening, if they don't know exactly who we're talking about, John Link is. I remember this is kind of funny because we know he's short, and I used to ask him how tall he was because we would get to. He insisted he was 5'3". And I said, no, because my first wife was 5'3". You're not 5'3". acted in so many films. I said, and he looks like Charles Manson. Anybody who doesn't realize this, John Link looks like Charles
That's
Manson.
True.
But he sounds like a Muppet, you know, on acid or something. but I put him against the wall. He's only four foot ten. And I said,
wow.
He tried to stand against the wall with his shoes on. I said, no. I said, I'm tired of this debate about you saying you're much taller than I know you are. And take off your shoes. And I said, now you stand against the wall. I drew the line like a little kid, and I measured it. I said, you are only 4 foot 10 inches tall. He's like, I must have shrunk.
Hey, Edward.
Yeah.
It's Nick. And hi, John,
yes.
When you're listening. But to comment on that, too, I always thought that he looked like Charles Manson, but I always thought to myself all these years that he looked like a crossbreed between Charles Manson and Animal from The Muppets. Just with the black hair. Imagine
that
Animal
more,
with black hair.
That is a more accurate description. I used to say he looks like Charles Manson if you washed Manson in hot water and then left him in the dryer too long.
hey, listen, we may have Ron Fitzgerald calling in.
Let me see.
Yeah, I talked to him earlier.
He hasn't called in yet.
We have Sammy
Greenwood on the phone, and you wanted to call in, and you wanted to send some well wishes to John. And
yeah.
By the way, Sammy, your birthday is in 34 minutes. So we here at Francy and Friends wanted to say happy birthday.
34 minutes?
34,
okay.
You're East Coast, right?
Okay.
In 34 minutes, it'll be midnight here on the East Coast.
It's 34 minutes.
East Coast man!
Okay, we wanted to say happy birthday. Me, William, and Tom, we recorded that about 10 minutes ago.
This is nice.
34 minutes too early. Let us help
and pray. The Saturday after Halloween, 6 days after Halloween, November 6th, will be John Link's birthday, and hopefully Let's just hope and pray that he'll be conscious and talkative by then. We'll know.
Well, that would
coming
be a
soon.
Good prayer.
Amen to that.
That's a good birthday Agreed. Wish.
That would be perfect. I mean, I'll admit, one of the things I always liked about John was he's got one of the most infectious laughs ever.
And we're hoping that Sue Effin Dent will call in tonight.
I forgot to notify
Tina,
John Stillman.
Tina, I know you wanted to call in and you wanted to say something to John Link.
Well, oh my gosh. I mean, we all love John so much, and just all the years of seeing John at Chiller with Edward and all the friends and all the family and everybody who loves him. I mean, there's so many prayers, and I just really, John, we need to see you, especially like Edward just said, your birthday's coming up soon too, so we all want to wish you a happy birthday so that you can smile for us. We really love you. I love John. I mean, it's just, he makes every Chiller so special every time I see him. So we're praying. Oh, and
what is so unfortunate is that he's on the website and in the program. John was scheduled. John is scheduled to be an official guest at Kevin Clements' Halloween Chiller Theater Expo and Convention. which is the Halloween weekend, the Friday the 29th through Sunday the 31st. And he was really excited about that. That, well, he's been a guest a few times, but he got some big coverage this time, and Kevin was hoping to treat him royally. And the irony is John gets this star treatment, and he's not there to bathe in the spotlight. Yeah. It's we all were going to be at a table together. It was going to be Pete Jackalone's table, and it was going to be the cast members of the movie The Killer Clown Meets the Candyman.
I want to see that movie.
It's on a. I'll send Francie a link. It's connected to a streaming site called Gumroad, and you could download it and rent it or buy it. That usual thing there. But that's really an incredible movie. I'm very proud of that. We took the template at first of Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. It was my idea. I'm not just one of the stars of it. I also co-produced it, co-wrote it, really dreamt up the concept. But Pete Jackalone and I took the template of Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, and instead of like monsters, like science fiction or mythological monsters, we chose like two of the most disgusting serial killers that had ever lived in American history. And we decided it was going to be John Wayne Gacy, the killer clown, who is played by Jeremy Woodworth, who I hope can join us later. And I played Dean Corll, the Texas Candyman killer. They were operating simultaneously. We decided what if they met. And then I got the idea. I said, Pete, we have to take this a step further. It isn't an homage to Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. Let's make it House of Frankenstein. And I said, what do you mean? I said, let's throw Dracula into the loop. He said, who's Dracula? I said, well, Dracula would be Charles Manson. We got to have John Link play Charles Manson. Everybody's been telling him he looks like Manson forever, for the past half century. And nobody ever cast him as Manson. And actually, John was very, very excited and proud of this role. And so what's ironic is he gets to play Manson, and sadly, within 2 months after he finished his performance is when he has his stroke. So he never got to make it to the premiere. But he's great because it was like, you know, John Link, here he is 4'10", looks like Manson. At the time, he's 71 years old when he's playing Manson, and he got his hair dyed jet black to cover all the gray. And we had him in a motel room. We hired 10 really hot, sexy teenage actresses to play the hippie chick members of the Manson family. And so that they're like all over him. They're like sprinkles on an ice cream cone. They're all over him. John was in some bizarre, weird grindhouse paradise. He was very happy with that role, and it has to be seen to be believed. To see John Link John Link almost in a James Bond situation where he is surrounded with 10 like drop dead gorgeous teenage women who are literally worshiping him.
Oh,
I will tell you,
John Link did love the ladies.
Oh, he was a ladies' man.
He loved his ladies. I do have a message for John Link. Scott Schiaffo I really hope I pronounced that name right. Clerks 1, Clerks 2, Clerks 3. He's working with David Madison a lot. He wanted me to give John Link this message. He says he's sorry. He cannot call in. He's on the road right now. He said, please tell John that his acting peers and his New Jersey peeps send their love and light. So there you go, man. You got Scott Schiaffo on your side, John.
Nice.
The Chuli's gum man.
What an only.
Don't smoke cigarettes, but chew Chuli's gum and you'll be just fine.
I got another couple of announcements that people wanted me to send. Christy Dorch said thoughts and prayers, and there's a little giving their thoughts and prayers. My aunt, who was married to my stepfather, Ruth Metz Crumpton, has praying hands, along with Joseph Posel. Lonnie K. Johnson, she said, that's a soul tie, keep telling him. Leon Kell is sending his love to John Link also. There we go. We got Scotch. Yeah, I mean, there's messages everywhere for John Link. And I hope that John Link hears the outpours of Christ, because he is love.
If I could share my personal John Link experience, would that be fair?
Yes, Brett.
Yeah, go for it.
This guy, we had conversations with him that were so out of the world. John Link was a guy that, seriously, we would have conversations with him, and it would all start out all normal and stuff. And then the next thing you know, there was some weird shit going on, like in his personal space. And I know most of it had to do with his brother, which, you know, was a very bad situation. But holy shit, the radio potential of this stuff, it was just amazing. I mean, John Link was like a guy that I loved talking to, because everything just went all kinds of crazy, like every time, all the time. It was not just, you couldn't, how do I put this? It wasn't a situation that was ever normal. I guess it's the best way to put it.
It's never scripted. It's never scripted with John Link.
Yeah, and it's brutally honest, too.
Yeah, exactly.
John's a sharp guy, but he's like a child. He's got no censoring devices. He's incapable of guile or ruse. He doesn't know how to lie. He doesn't know how to lie even when you should lie, because out of politeness, you just shouldn't be brutally honest. He's incapable of such. The stories he told about himself and his family were you're right, they were absolutely real, and they were hard to believe.
That was the whole thing about John. John Link was all about, like, an innocence and an honesty.
A childlike innocence. I always called it a childlike innocence.
Yeah. It is
in a lot of ways.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the thing. Okay, listen, that was the thing about John Link, is he had a straightforward honesty, like, this is who I am. This is who you are. We should all embrace that type of model, honestly, and say that this is who we are. This is what we're doing. This is it. I mean, let's not lie to each other about who we are. John was, that's kind of like, yeah, he was very innocent in his understanding of things, but he also had that understanding, I think, that all of us could embrace if we wanted to.
He's like a Candide figure. If Candide were like rewritten by like Jerzy Kosinski.
Right.
Yep, that's for sure.
Nicola Freese, you get that literary reference.
Yeah. Yep, I do.
You guys, I just got another message. This is from Melanie Bradley. We know her as Melanie Roble, but she is married now. She just sent me a message, and she said, tell him he has to wake up. because we still have not met. We are supposed to meet. I talked to him for years. I bond and determined to meet. So wake up! That's for Melanie Robo. She's at work
Melanie acted in a movie with John Link. Well, one of his big movies. It was Cameron Scott's Postmortem America 2021. It's just that Melanie's scenes were all shot out in like Indiana and Illinois, and John's scenes were shot in Jersey and New York City. And of course, you know, through the magic of film editing, they're in the same scene. And yeah, John actually played, I think he played Melanie's father in the movie. Oh, no, I was Melanie's father in the movie. I totally forgot. I was Melanie's father. And John was my hunchbacked assistant. That's right. The movie's about like 10 years old. But yes, that was the nature of it. But yeah, Melanie did act with John, even though they were never on the same set at the same time. Through editing, they were in the same scene.
I remember that, and I remember when Cam got John Link to be in the movie, and he's like, "Holy shit, I got freaking John Link!" And he wrote that just for John Link. And he was so excited. Yeah. He was like, "Man, I got so much to do with John Link."
We actually the scene, it's rather bizarre because Cameron 10 years ago, in the summer of 2011, drove like about 800 miles from Illinois or Indiana. I think Indiana was where he was living. He drove from Indiana to New York City to visit my late fiance Susie Palermo, who was incapacitated in a hospital in New York, a hospice in New York. I mean, she had cancer and she wasn't going to recover. But Cameron drove out there, and John was pretty much there every day at the hospital, helping me out and keeping Susie company. But Cameron got the idea. I'd already shot some scenes in Indiana for the movie, and I still had the costume with me. And he wanted to shoot additional scenes with John as my assistant. So we actually, I forget how we did it. We found like a stairwell, and we shot most of our scenes on the roof of this hospital out in the Bronx. So we did John's scenes out there, and it was like an Italian film, those scenes, because it was so noisy that we couldn't. It was supposed to be an apocalyptic world where, like, almost everybody's dead, and there's all these sounds of traffic and just people and the airport nearby. So we actually shot the whole thing silent, and then we were very rigid about our lines, what they were, and so we didn't have any dubbing equipment. But later, back in Susie's hospital room, John and I simply read off our lines with the same cadence they were delivered, and magically they were dubbed in almost seamlessly, not like a badly dubbed Asian film. They like really worked, and I was like, wow, this is like a dreamy, like, you know, Cinecittà, you know, Italian movie, you know. And so John did dub his own voice. But there we were. It was bizarre. I mean, John's weird world. Here we were illegally on the rooftop of a hospital in the Bronx in New York, and I'm cloaked in red, like this red mad priest's attire. And John's wearing a black robe, you know, with his fingernails painted black. And here we are acting out this bizarre occult-like scene on the roof of a hospital. And Susie was able to see the footage. She just couldn't make it up to the roof of the hospital. But it was a lot of fun and weird, just one of the weird segments of John's very strange life, which I hope continues in its strangeness. I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, John did not do a lot of rehab after his stroke. And some people even questioned me, and they questioned me in a well-meaning way. like you're working so hard to bring John back, but what are you bringing him back to? I mean, he still is pretty much largely paralyzed in his right side.
That's what William and I, and you and I also discussed that too.
And he likes to be free as a bird or free as a bat out of hell. And it has been recommended numerous times since he had his stroke that, you know, you have your Medicare and your Social Security. You are, you know, in your 70s, you've had a stroke, debilitating stroke. You completely qualify to go into a permanent rehab facility, or let us say for the word that used to make John, the words that made John cringe, nursing home. He always said he'd rather die in the street than go into a nursing home. And I said, look, John, and he was briefly in one and he got out after his stroke. I said, that was a very nice place. They fed you well and you were comfortable and you had your own room. But I mean, he always needs to be completely free, but he can't be completely free anymore. But if it's any consolation, I hope he wakes up and realizes. Pete Jackalone, if he's listening, because he couldn't make it on the show tonight, Pete Jackalone said he would fully, certainly use John in every one of his movies. He would write it into the script that John was a mad prophet or a mad scientist or an older. He would use it as an excuse to go to the nursing home. Even if John was in the wheelchair, he would play a character that happened to be in a wheelchair. And so, his acting in horror movies will not come to an end if he survives. Pete will always use him. And I know Ted Mooring, if he's listening, said that he would gladly drive out from Western Pennsylvania and work with John under any circumstance. So there, you know, his acting career won't come to an end. And I think he was afraid of that.
Yeah.
I think
you brought up a good point.
Go ahead, Randy.
I was going to say, Ed, you and I, we did talk about this, you know. Oh, that is kind of scary because you and I, you told me the whole backstory, and I'm not gonna say anything. You know, if you want to talk about it, you can. But yeah, that is the scary part. What does he have to come back for? And I think movies, that would be great for him and to come out of it, but. You know, it's kind of like people fight harder for their lives because they think, hey, if I do this, then I get to go back to this. But what would John go back for?
Well, I mean, I and the friends out here that he has on the East Coast would make it worth. We would do everything to make his life worthwhile, but. He is worried that, you know, John's a hoarder, and over the years it's tragic because it's all in his brother's possession, and his brother Fred is really an evil and stupid and sociopathic person.
Man.
I mean, he's comical in his weirdness, but Fred has admitted that John has collected movie posters, uncountable 8x10 photographs of movie stars, a lot of whom are dead. He had vintage toys from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and he kept the original packages they came in. He had tons of old comic books, of old superhero, and even old EC horror comics from the 50s. And that's how his brother sort of kept control over him. He would threaten that if John wasn't cooperative and John didn't give him some of his Social Security money that he would throw out his belongings, and when John was able, you know, he was able to fight with his brother, but his brother really took advantage of him once he was wheelchair bound. It really put fear into his head. You'll end up in a nursing home, and I'll throw your stuff out. And it's happened already. But I mean, John often said that if he lost his collectibles, he would rather die. And sadly, that was one of our last, before he collapsed, that was one of our last conversations. I was telling him, let it go, John. Just fucking let it go. Break free from your brother. live on your own, move into a facility. We're not going to you're not going to be like one of these old people that gets forgotten in the nursing home. I said you'll be like Larry Fine, you know, of the Three Stooges, where he had constant visitors coming. You know, there were always people coming to the nursing home to see Larry, including Iggy Pop and the Stooges, because they were huge Three Stooges fans, which is how they chose the name. But Iggy Pop and the Asherton brothers used to go and visit Larry Fine all the time. I told John, I said, you'll have that kind of status. You'll be the celebrity in the nursing home. You won't be the person who's forgotten in the back and just sits and staring at the wall all day in the wheelchair. I was trying to give him some hope, but he couldn't accept the fact that he was getting older. And said, look, I'm getting older. I'm 62. I'm getting older and my health is failing. I used to be so athletic. I used to run marathons. Now I could barely climb a flight of stairs. Of course, I've been handicapped at a very terrible car accident. What's ironic is that what's totally ironic is that where John collapsed, he's in the same hospital on the same floor where I was in ICU when I got smashed up in a car accident in 2015. And I'm like, this is weird. I'm in this hospital. Of course, I was only there a few weeks recovering, had to have some surgeries because I broke a lot of bones. But I left the hospital, but here I was, and I went back there to have pins taken out of my wrist. I'm like, I can't believe John is on the exact same floor where I was. It's just, there's a weird circle to life and such, but I hope he'll walk out of that floor. But I got to admit, the way he looked yesterday, I wasn't feeling very optimistic.
Yeah, you're
going to
send
me photos.
I was going to say,
Edward, can you, from what you just said, what are your feelings about the outcome of the situation for John at this time? What are your personal feelings about it?
Personal feelings. It's like a roller coaster. Monday I thought he was coming back, and I thought, you know, somebody once joked John Link is kind of like a human cockroach. You know, if they drop the bomb, if they drop the atomic bomb, he'd be the last one left.
It's like we all knew John Link would be around forever, this fucking guy.
Well, what is sad, it was really like the Addams Family or the Munsters. When I first became friends with John Link, he's already in his 50s, and his brother is a few years younger than him. But they were living with their extremely nasty, dominant mother all in this house. It was like the Munsters' house, this old house up in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. It was a two-family house, too. They were renting out half the house to a family, an Indian family. I don't know how they tolerated living next door to, like, these weirdos that made the Munsters or the Addams Family look more like, you know, the Brady Bunch. But it was these two like guys approaching their senior years, who like brothers, who really complete rivalry, worse than Cain and Abel. And the mother was like Mrs. Bates from Psycho. And she lived to, she died just like 2 weeks short of her 100th birthday. And nastiness. I mean, she's largely responsible for the Link brothers being weirdos, because John's father, you know, John didn't like to go on about tragedy and the suffering he had, but I had to squeeze these things out of him and learn them. He really only wanted to talk about things that were kind of funny or amusing or happy stuff, even though he was from this dark horror movie world. But John's father was seriously injured when he was a kid in an industrial accident on a job in a factory. And never recovered, and really languished and got worse and worse for like about 2 years before he died. He was only about 52 when he died, and when John's father died, apparently the mother went nuts and she became like a obsessive compulsive fanatic and wouldn't let young John, a child, and his brother have friends or do stuff after school. It was like other children were dangerous and dirty, and they were disease carrying little rodents. And John and his brother had to come home, and she was religiously obsessed. That's one of the reasons why John was so iconoclastic, shall we say. But John rebelled, and she hated horror movies and hated comic books. But John would secretly, John had his hands on a little, which he still had up until the time he lost the house. He secretly had a tiny portable black and white TV with a rabbit ears that was plugged. He plugged in the basement. And he would sneak down into the basement of the house and like watch late night monster movies as a kid on this little black and white TV that his mother didn't know he had picked up. Somebody left it on a curb with the garbage. They were just getting rid of it and it still worked. And to get away from his brother, he was still going down into that basement even up until a few years ago. And had a small VCR attached to the TV. He didn't understand or know how to use DVD players, but those are the origins of John Link and some of the strangeness. But once again, he's a bizarre character, and the whole family is bizarre. I describe his brother Fred. People have to understand John's 4'10", and he looks like Charles Manson. Yet he always tried to style his hair and his mustache after Edgar Allan Poe. That's what he was trying to do, but he doesn't look like Edgar Allan Poe. He looks like Charles Manson.
I can kind of see the Edgar Allan Poe aspect of John's demeanor there, what he was trying to do. I kind of saw that a little bit.
And his brother looks like a far more like his brother looks like Doc Brown from the Back to the Future series. He looks like Doc Brown if Doc Brown caught rabies.
Oh boy!
Or you know what? Or if Doc Brown was a total asshole.
Yes,
that'd be more like him.
He was not his brother is not the kindly Christopher Lloyd type.
No, not at all. From what we're getting, from the information that we're getting, from what we've always understood for a long time, you know, when John has been on Francie and Friends, it was always a conflict between his brother Fred. Like, this guy was just a fucking asshole and caused all kinds of, you know, problems. And I remember, and we're not going to play those clips, but there are clips.
I just looked at my switchboard, and I did not know that I had this. I actually have Fred and John conversation on my switchboard. It's just Fred and John.
I think it's pretty fair that we shouldn't play those clips.
Well, I will say,
right now we're
having fun.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure what that is. I did not know I even had that on my switchboard. I don't even remember what it was.
Well, I will say, just a basic understanding of their rivalry. John, with all of his strangeness and weirdness, you might think you're being 4'10". And part of it, look, he suffered a lot as a kid because his mother, we're talking about the 40s and 50s, they knew that he had some kind of condition or he was going to be very short. John might technically be a tall midget. You know, I mean, that's not even a politically correct term anymore, is it? But his mother put him through very painful medical treatments when he was a kid in some attempt to stretch him out and make him taller and more acceptable. And he told me how agonizing. This was like something out of a concentration camp. And this is where his personality got formed. I mean, he suffered under like mad doctors. And like I said, John, though, as weird and maybe disabled as he might be in his appearance and such, stumbled into working on underground horror movies and even like radio shows, as we know. But also, he was part of the rock and roll, the punk rock scene in New York. I mean, I became his friend, and I was part of the David Peel band, David Peel in the Lower East Side. And David Peel welcomed John into the band for about 3 or 4 years. John Link was part of David Peel in the Lower East Side, a band which, before John joined, had like three gold albums. I mean, John Lennon used to produce. John Lennon used to produce David Peel's records, and David Peel, of course, went on to produce G.G. Allin. All of us who remember him. But the John's a horror movie star. He's a bona fide rock and roller, radio star, bizarre philosopher. A walking encyclopedia of the occult. But Fred, on the other hand, John has a lot of friends. Everybody in the CBGB scene knows John, and he was always welcome there. But Fred is a joyless slugworm of a human. Fred has no friends. He believes that having fun is sinful and decadent. He believes in work. The work he does is insane. He's like a human ant. He hoards scrap metal. He's a scrapper, but then he doesn't like to turn the scrap in to get. So he collects garbage, but he doesn't like to turn it in because once he amasses this quantity of like aluminum or like old pieces of steel, like broken bicycles and hot dog wagons and bumpers, he'd rather just pile it up and look at it like he's the golem from Lord of the Rings and rub his hands together and say it's my precious. He views it as a treasure. But they had a lot of rivalry because Fred, I know Fred very well. Fred bitterly resented the fact that his brother went out and had fun and had a great social life and was, you know, let's face it, famous on the underground level. Even my late friend, my late friend Lee Black Childers, who played a police detective, Lee Black Childers, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was part of Warhol's factory. He loved John, and Lee often said, that's Lee with three E's, by the way, Lee Black Childers. He often said with his Kentucky accent, he's like, how I wish Andy could have met John Link, because I'll tell you, Andy would have loved him. Andy would have made him one of his superstars. John would have starred in factory movies if only Andy had met him back when he was making films. And he would have been. John would have been. Andy Warhol, I'm talking about.
Andy Warhol, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And yeah, Lee said Andy Warhol would have adored him.
I mean, I can almost picture something like that, though. The one shot of John where he's got that really wacky grin on his face, superimposed over all the Campbell's soup gunk.
Honestly, yeah, totally, dude. That would have been a Warhol classic.
Yeah.
And I believe, John. I mean, John knew Lee through me, and Lee has since died. Unfortunately, he died a few years ago. He was elderly, but I believe John Link is friends with Joe D'Alessandro, Warhol's number one superstar. I mean, he ended up meeting and bonding with numerous members of the family. I mean, of the factory, not the family. John actually has no connection to any members of the Manson family, even though he looks like Manson. He is friends with numerous members of Andy Warhol's factory scene. If Andy had met him, hadn't died before John hit the scene, I'm sure Andy would have probably been doing like he would have been doing. Silk screens of John Link's face, I'm sure.
I think you are correct.
But yeah, but you should try to go to Gumroad and rent The Killer Clown Meets the Candyman to see John as Manson. And I forget the rental site right now. There's another, you can probably find it just by Googling it. You should look up Bigfoot Blood Trap. That was an homage we made to Sam Sherman films. And we tried to make the sleaziest drive-in movie tribute ever. And I played I was recovering from my car accident. So I was I couldn't walk very well. I was a wheelchair-bound mad scientist. And John was my diminutive assistant pushing me around in the wheelchair, and his name was Groton. that's a pretty good movie too.
But well, I mean, it sounds like something from a Roger Corman film.
Well, Sam Sherman. And actually, tomorrow night I'm going to be at a Sam Sherman festival at the Circle Drive-In in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and the first movie we're showing is going to be Dracula versus Frankenstein, which was the last movie ever made by Lon Chaney Jr. and J. Carroll Nash. And J. Carroll Nash was wheelchair bound. He played Dr. Frankenstein modern day on the California coast. And Lon Chaney, who had throat cancer and couldn't talk, played his mute assistant Groton, pushing him around in the wheelchair. So it was a direct homage. And
nice.
And John is pretty cool in that movie, even though to John's chagrin, the director, John Arricchio, reached a point where he couldn't stand working with John Link, and he fired him before the movie was done being made. John's had a lot of screen time, but he couldn't stand John on the set anymore because he couldn't stand his eccentricities. So he out and out fired him and had him killed off screen by the Bigfoot. And we had Jay Stoddard, the makeup artist. We had her make a dummy head look just like John Link, but we were like, the Bigfoot has torn Groton's head off. but John was furious because he was supposed to have about five or six more scenes, and the director was like, no, I can't take working with this guy anymore. He's too much. He's too much of too much baggage. So John got fired from that one, but he's still in it, and he still has a big screen credit too. I told the director, I said he's not easy to work with, but the stuff that you have is priceless.
You know, and guys, people, everybody, I've been like throughout the show. I know we got the Halloween thing. We've got looky-loos. I go out there and I greet them and stuff back and forth. I've been going back to my media library with DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff looking for, I know I have at least five, six movies that have John Link in them. I can't find them because there's so many. I found a couple of yours, Ed's.
Oh, great.
But I can't find John's. I bought them because he was in them, and I can't find them at all. I wanted to like mention something about that, but for lack of finding them, still mentioning something about that.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, John, you said that he's had over 100 credits.
Even he lost count. He was interviewed recently. We were interviewed together before his stroke. And somebody asked him how many movies he did. Yeah, like I said, he's always been a little bit daft. And he said, I don't know, about 20 or 30. And I said, John, you and I have been in 25 movies. I said, you've done a lot more than 20 or 30 horror films. I think you're probably in the three. You've got to be in the three digits.
One thing that I wanted to tell him when you had, I think it was last night, me talking to him over your cell phone in his ear. One thing I forgot to like tell him is that he's a legend with those movies, and he may feel like the last handful of years or so that he's, especially you know the circumstances surrounding what he's going through right now and all that, is that he may feel like he doesn't mean anything and that he's lonely and that, we have to remind him of his life and accomplishments because he's done so many things that even a lot of wannabe actors have never even dreamed of doing over the years. It's the longevity of the whole thing. He's one of the greatest character actors that I have ever seen. He's an amazing talent and an amazing person, an amazing personality. Can't say amazing enough. John, if you're listening to this too, got to tell you, you got like more stuff ahead of you. If you just snap out
John
of it,
was
because
listening
you had an incredible
and,
life, and you still
if
can.
If John was listening and he's hearing everybody bragging about him, he would just say.
He would. Hey, there's a lot of times on your show where I would think I'm saying something funny to him, and he would just like go, hey, that reminds me of my dad, Francie.
Yeah.
He would always go,
give me an inventory of the movies you have, and I'll try to fill in the gaps if I've got extra copies of some of the others. I know that it's free online. Just go to Google and put in the movie called Creepy Clowns, the killer clowns in the movies tickles people to death, so it's the Luna Tickler, which was the shooting title. But the distributor decided to call it.
That is on
Vimeo. It is on Vimeo, and T. Jack alone elected to have it password free as a free gift to showcase what he makes, but also to showcase John Link's talents. If you could find a link to the full movie of Creepy Clowns, the Luna Tickler, it's one of John's very best roles as an actor, one of his biggest parts. He actually plays a if you can believe it, he's 4'10". He plays a brutal, terrifying street pimp called Diablo Sanchez. And when his women hold out on him, it's no quarter and no mercy. And so it's John as a ruthlessly, and he's really kind of scary, as a ruthlessly savage, vindictive gangster. And you got to find Creepy Clowns, the Luna Tickler. It's free. You find the link on Vimeo. There's no charge. You can watch it as soon as you find it. I'll find the link and email it to you later. But it's one of his best performances. We shot that. That was shot when I had my car accident. I'm in the movie. I play a character who's alive, and then later I'm a ghost. And ironically, I'd shot all of my living scenes before my car accident. Then I got smashed up, and the movie was put on hold for the better part of a year, and we resumed filming. And post-accident, like a year's worth of recovery, you know, exercising, I actually gained weight and look a bit different, but it's almost appropriate because I come back as a ghost. So that's an interest. But John is a spectacular performance from him in that. And we were very nervous because it's John Link, but Pete Jackalone doesn't like to use phony props. So John is really like slinging around this 9mm Glock. make sure the damn thing is unloaded before you give it to Link. But make absolutely sure there's not a round in the chamber before you put this gun in John Link's hands.
Tell John that if he gives up, starting next week, we are going to get license to deep fake his image on some of the best scenes in cinematic history, where John Link is going to be Luke Skywalker or something. We're going to exploit his face everywhere. And if he doesn't want that, then he's got to say that he doesn't want that.
That sounds fair enough. I mean, would you have that weak face out?
I think actually he'd think that would be hilarious to deepfake his face on some of the, like Jack Nicholson in The Shining. Imagine it's John Link and not Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, or over Clark Gable's face in Gone with the Wind. In a romantic, in a romantic scene with Vivian Leigh.
or Leonardo DiCaprio in the Titanic movie.
I can see John addressing Scarlett O'Hara.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a shit.
That's a great impersonation. Yeah. Yep.
It took me a second to get that. It took me a second to get that. I was the hand grenade laughter.
Listen. Hey, Nick. You're fucking sadistic, dude. You are a sadistic motherfucker right there.
but it's quite funny. I mean, he's a great character actor. He's a great personality. Yeah. He deserves to have his face splashed on some other character in a movie. I bet you he would wake up for something like that if somebody showed it to him. It's like, hey, John. Edward would, like, you know, nudge him. Go, open your eyes. And take a look at this. Check this out.
Listen, he would be like, oh, I got something to do now. This is, like, invigorating.
What he'd probably say, maybe, if he's not in his right state of mind, was, what, was I in Star Wars?
You know what is interesting? You were mentioning it, Nick, that, you know, I mean, here he was. Here's a guy with, like, no money, virtually impoverished, and 4'10", and, like the neighborhood weirdo, living in the Michael Myers house at the end of their block. Yeah, but yet, I mean, he ended up starring in all these movies and ended up in a very famous rock and roll band. David Peel used to call him the Little Monster. Now we're bringing the Little Monster up here with us. But John didn't just act in these low-budget horror films. Somehow he stumbled into the fortune of acting with quite a number of his childhood idols. I mean, he got to work with Conrad Brooks from the and Dolores Fuller from the Ed Wood crew from Plan 9 from Outer Space. He got to work numerous times with George Stover. The one actor who has appeared in every single John Waters movie, a childhood friend of John Waters. He's been in every John Waters movie.
Oh.
Yeah, speaking of, remember we used to call him on the show a lot. And John Link's like,
Conrad Brooks.
No, keep me out.
Oh, Conrad Brooks, I remember those, though.
we used to have great problems all the time. And John would say on the show all the time, I had nothing to do with this.
Conrad Brooks was a lot like John Link, too. He was a weird little guy that starred in these Ed Wood movies like Plan 9 from Outer Space and also... I used to talk to Conrad all the time on the phone, and I got to give Conrad credit. I mean, he was sick, and he was terminally ill, and he never made a big deal about it. He always said, oh, I'm feeling much better. I learned later from his daughter that he was suffering terribly, but he always kept his spirits up and tried to keep on going and would work on anybody's movie to keep working. But also, like I said, John always had an attraction to Linnea Quigley, and he ends up making like two or three movies with Linnea Quigley. I mean, how many of us get to work with our idols? Get to work, not just to work in a field we want to work in.
I got to kiss Linnea Quigley. He made that out for our other friend, John, which we will not say his last name. He did that. As a, you know, you're going to make fun of me online. Hey, I got to kiss Linnea Quigley.
It was more than a kiss. This movie better get released someday. It's never been released because there were some tragedies involved with the production. It got it shelved. It's Victor Bonacore's Blood Wings. John's got a full-blown love scene with Linnea Quigley. I mean, it's just bizarre.
Now we're talking.
See, there's John. He doesn't brag too much about himself. He just says, I got to kiss Linnea Quigley. And he did that to say, what have you done?
That's true.
Now,
the other John, we know we're talking about, the other John is probably never going to get out of federal prison. He did terrible things to John Lincoln, tried to hurt him for fun because he was a bully, but he ended up going to federal prison on like a 20-year sentence for dealing in crystal meth interstate. So we don't have to worry about him anymore.
About back in the day is, it's not really back in the day. I've seen a lot of the rhetoric between you and John about politics and stuff. I just want to mention this once because I was thinking of this afternoon, and I think it's kind of funny. But you're like during the Trump era, you were actually in Time Magazine. Your face was like right there for everybody to see. And John is exactly the opposite, and he has opposing views. And both of you have very, very opposing views about politics. And I was thinking this afternoon about that, and I was going, wouldn't that be great if, like, John, he's probably going to kill me for this when he wakes up. That would be funny if John, when he wakes up, and his first words were, aren't I a Republican? I'm a Republican.
Jeremy Woodworth and I played a joke on John at a Chiller Theater convention a few years ago, where John fell asleep in a soft chair in the lobby of the hotel, because those conventions could get very tiring. I mean, you just go all day, but Jeremy said, why don't you put your MAGA hat on him and I'll take a picture. And John woke up in the middle of it, and he was so enraged. I mean, he was like a whole nest of hornets that had been disturbed. I mean, Jeremy had to prove to him that he was destroying the picture, taking it out of his camera. I was thinking, if he's in the hospital, I mean, it would only be if he was coming out of his coma. If I could know that he was going to definitely get well, I'd put a MAGA hat on his head right now in the hospital bed and take it.
No. Well, yeah, he would hate that. You were at it for a while.
Yeah. But I wanted so badly to take a picture of him in the hospital so I could show you where his progress is, but I didn't want to take a picture when he had an intubation tube down his throat. I mean, it looks so bad right now. I mean, I was hoping Monday when he was, like, looking at me, I was hoping maybe they'll take him off of all these tubes and then I could get a picture of him in the hospital bed sort of smiling on the mend, but it would be too tragic for me to take a picture like that right now.
I totally get that. And, I mean, Ed, you're the guy that's, like, watching over this thing. You're the guy that's experiencing... Man, dude, you're probably the guy that's, you know, letting us all know what's going on.
It's hard for you to visit him when you live so far away, but he's been in the hospital since the 10th. What's today's? It's the 23rd, so he's been there 13 days in a coma.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, the nurses and doctors have told me, I'm the only one who's coming and staying. They said his brother shows up and just asks if he's still alive and what his progress is. And he goes, he walks in the room and just looks at him for a minute and then leaves. So, I mean, John could use more visitors.
His brother is an asshole. We all know that.
Totally.
You are the guy that's there for him, and you make that trip all the time, and you're the guy that's letting us all know here in Radio Land, you know, what's going on with John Link. And dude, you're in a position
one thing that I think Brett, you make up a good point. When John told me that he wanted to redo the show. And I told you, Brett, also about this. And you were there for that first show where John could not make it. And you stepped in and you and Edward talked. I did tell John, I said, we will do the show on one condition. Edward will be the guest. And he's like, and he laughed. And I told John Link, I said, there's one person that's going to be by your side always. It's going to be Edward. And John said, I know.
Here's the thing. We, Francie and I talked, and Nick and I talked last night, and we wanted to make this happen. And we made it happen. What we want to do with this thing, with this show, is if John Link is able to understand things, if he's in a position to where he can hear things, and, you know, perhaps this is the whole reason we did the show, we can let him know how much he's loved and how much he's appreciated. All right. And Edward, you're the guy that's like there with him. You're the guy that's, again, like you said, you're the only one visiting him. That's why we're doing this, because we just want, if he responds to anything at all in his coma, we can like talk to him right now. We can tell him what we feel. We can tell him, you know, how, what we feel about him and how much we love him. I mean, I'm starting to break down, but don't let me do this. That's what we want to do. That's why we did this thing tonight.
I refuse to lose hope. Like I said, the older you get, the stranger life gets. But I mean, my your radio show, by the way, was enormous help 10 years ago, because I stayed by Susie Palermo's side until the day she died. She was hospitalized for over a year, and I managed to finagle my way where they just let me stay in her room, and I got a small cot in there, and so I was living in that room, and it was kind of depressing. But John would come almost every day, and other guests came, but I really look forward to the Francie and Friends show, and to the Possum Hour, and to the John Link show, to keep going. Like I said, see, your show means a lot to him, and I hope he'll be back on. We tried to do it during the summer, and I didn't realize what situation he was in. That's what makes me mad at the country and the state of New Jersey in general. We have a governor here, Murphy, who's a godless communist, and we've got some of the heaviest COVID restrictions in New Jersey of any of the states. And I mean, look, New York and New Jersey.
Have you been to California?
Can't, like, it's worse out there, but it's pretty bad in Jersey. But John, and by the way, John does not have COVID. When I asked the doctors, and he doesn't believe in vaccinations. His brother did get vaccinated, so his brother's vaccinated. But I was going to say that when I came to the hospital the first time and I asked what's wrong with him, the doctor said, what isn't wrong with him? Because he had double pneumonia. He's septic. He's got bed sores. He's got renal failure. I could go on and on. And not to mention like deterioration of his spine, because he wasn't getting any exercise and left in a wheelchair like almost around the clock. But he was also starved. He was malnourished and dehydrated. No excuse for that. I mean, what's kind of sad is that I have a phone call from him that I was busy working on a movie set. I didn't have a chance to pick it up live, but he called me the day before he slept into the coma and got to the hospital. He was taken to the hospital, and that's where he was admitting to me in the phone call that he was scared that his brother was going too far, and he was scared of his brother not being taken care of. But yet, aww, in the phone call, he was still inquiring, is Francie really going to bring my show back? Can we get, I want my Blog Talk Radio show back.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing that melted me is you called me, and he couldn't get in touch with me, and that's because my phone was plugged into the garage. And even though he was in bad health, he told you that he was worried more about me than himself.
Yes.
And
he was very concerned about you and your health issues and your, you know, liver problems.
Yeah,
he was very worried about you.
And I called him, like, immediately. I was like, John, no, I'm here. We're just not connecting.
I was mentioning the governor here in COVID before, because even though he had, like I mentioned this earlier, even though he had a stroke which left him somewhat disabled, in the aftermath of this stroke, well, first of all, when he had the stroke, the neglect goes back years ago, because back in 2015, he was having problems with his blood pressure. I warned him he better look after himself, but he had the stroke in 2018. But his own brother admitted to me that he was too busy collecting scrap metal, that he knew his brother had a stroke. He said, yeah, he couldn't move his right side very well. He waited 3 fucking days before he took him to the hospital because he was too busy collecting scrap metal. He waited 3, and they say when you have a stroke, you should get treatment immediately. And they told me at the hospital he had a relatively minor stroke, but because he didn't get treatment for 3 days, there was further damage occurred in the area of his brain that enables motor skills, and it left him far more paralyzed than he should have been. But yet, before COVID, because of his manic determination to get to these conventions, I mean, he needed the wheelchair a lot of the times, but he could walk. I mean, his right arm was pretty paralyzed, so he'd hold it in a sling, and he was able to, walk while dragging his right foot. And I told him, I said, you're walking like Carice the Mummy, like Lon Chaney Jr. in the old Mummy movies. But the thing is, he forced himself to exercise, and friends were still visiting him, and he was still trying to make it to the rock and roll clubs and any free meals or dinners or any horror convention or even make it to the movies to see horror films. But this damn COVID, he is a victim of the COVID-19 virus lockdowns, and a lot of people are such victims. I mean, because everything got locked down in New Jersey – and the conventions came to an end, and there were no restaurants open and no movie theaters, and there was no more live music. There's no more rock and roll bars, no more gatherings in the parks of New York, John, and you couldn't even visit. I mean, John was left in isolation to atrophy at the mercy of his brother. Nobody saw this abuse. Nobody saw that he was deteriorating so rapidly. In the middle of the lockdown, I saw him once. There was a director, Mike Stewart from Pennsylvania, doing a science fiction film, and he really wanted Link and I as a comedy team in his movie in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And he actually hired a driver to drive from Pennsylvania to Newark, New Jersey, to pick up John and to bring him back to Pennsylvania to do his scenes and then drive him back. It was an unbelievable 2-day ordeal for the driver. But I saw then the lockdown in August of 2020 was March till August. It was about 5 or 6 months old, and I saw that John was slipping. But yet he was still able to walk, but far poorly. He was more wheelchair bound. But none of us had any idea that he was being completely neglected and atrophying and wasting away. And it was because of the COVID, because nobody was able to visit. Nobody was able to travel. There was no excuse to get together. There were no conventions. I mean, no movies being made. It's like I said, this is the other terrible side effect of this virus. There are a lot. I mean, think of the abused children who are stuck in the abused households. Think of other senior citizens out there who really rely on help and visitors and know, even the nursing home people who waste away lonely and forgotten because people can't visit. It's but yet ironic when I asked them what was wrong with him, they said, "What is it?" I said, "Does he have COVID?" "Oh no, we tested him for that first thing. He doesn't have COVID." So I mean, like, John has everything imaginable wrong with him except for the COVID virus. But yet the COVID virus is responsible for this neglect to – it enabled the neglect to happen. It enabled Fred to take total control of his life and to take a good portion of his Social Security money, because now Fred is the one cashing the checks and Fred is the one keeping as much of the money as he wants and needs for his own personal needs. And John's left to sit at home to waste away.
And that sucks.
One
thing I think that we need to shout out to is call the hospital. Call, notify the New Jersey, government.
I told them they could give the social workers my name and have the social worker call me. So we'll find out what happened. I've also told them, this is ironic too, John was in the hospital over a month ago he said that his – I thought maybe it was phlebitis. He said that his leg was swelling up, and it was all swollen and red, his paralyzed leg. I said, it sounds like phlebitis. I mean, but
yes,
he told me
–
But he told me, he said the doctors had recommended that he go into – that. I didn't know what he looked like. He said the doctors had strongly recommended he go into a nursing home, a long-term care facility that he needed to, like, get back into shape. And I was telling him a month ago, that's a good thing, John. I think you need some medical attention, because he never trusted doctors. I said, you got to do this. Go in. And he was – the brother was already putting the notion in his head, you'll never get out. It'll be like you're in prison. And I said, no, you get better, they're going to kick you out. They're not going to keep you there. But I didn't see him at that time. I didn't know how bad he was. But if he'd gone into the nursing facility then, maybe he wouldn't be in – I'm sure he wouldn't be in this state now, because it turns out the swelling in his leg was from the renal failure. He instead insisted on leaving because his brother told him to tell him, my brother takes good care of me, and my brother will look after me. It's – and they released him, and then like within 2 weeks later, he's in a coma. I told him, you don't release, if this guy gets better, you do not turn him over to his brother again, because you'll be sending him to his death sentence. By the way, anybody here of Turner Classic Movies?
Oh yeah.
PCN? I think Sunday at 8 p.m. they are showing horror movies because it's October. At 8 p.m. Sunday, they're going to show Whatever Happened to Baby Jane with Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. And if anybody wants to know what happened to John Link, I realize the story is exactly like Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. You got to picture John Link as Joan Crawford, and you got to picture his brother as Betty Davis. And that is what happened in that home.
Is that even with Joan Crawford's mustache, or just do you think John still has the better one?
Edward,
I got a question for you. As far as John Link's care, I know that you're very close to the process and what's going on, but do you have legal, like?
No, I've got no legal leg to stand on. I'm just a friend.
That's what I'm wondering about, because if this guy Fred, his brother.
Yeah, it's the only family
legal,
he's got left.
Yeah. Yeah.
I lied to get in, because when he was first in the ICU, I mean, he was so critical. They were only going to let family in. So I lied. I don't look anything like him. I'm 6'1". But I lied. I said I'm his cousin from South Jersey. And I live about 100 miles from the hospital. These have been long trips I've been making for the past 13 days. I've been up there 3 times already. It's tough. It's only almost 100 miles away from me. But Newark, because I live in South Jersey on the shore. But I lied and claimed that I was his cousin. And I said, I'm his cousin and probably his closest friend. I'm the closest family he has who really cares about him. His brother's no good. But so they think I'm his cousin. But if they find out, ultimately, when whatever happens, they'll realize that I'm not his cousin. I've told other people too, like Jay Stoddard, who is a wonderful person, has worked with John numerous times, and we went out for a while too. She's a very talented makeup artist, but I told her, I said, she's going to lie and claim she's John's niece. and she was going to visit. I want to give her credit. She was going to visit, but she has unfortunately come down with COVID. I talked to her on the phone today. She sounds terrible. She said that she's been having the fevers. She can hardly breathe. She's trying to, like, weather it at home. I said, get your ass to a hospital. I said, if you sound awful, and if you're telling me you're having trouble breathing, you shouldn't fuck around with this. You should do something about this. But she said, I can't visit John in this condition. They wouldn't let me in. I'm coughing, sneezing. I can hardly breathe. I got a fever. I said, no, they certainly will not let you in. And you wouldn't want to do that. But, yeah, John, that's the unfortunate thing is I think he has some distant relatives. But, you know, they would draw their distance between a weird – you know, he's the black sheep of the family for sure. But the only relative he's close to is his brother. And like I said, what is unfortunate is that when Mom was alive, there was order in this chaotic, weird, monster-like house. And when Mom died – Fred went hog wild, and that's the sad thing. Fred went nuts. He was unrestrained. He began hoarding like a madman, worse than anything you'd seen in hoarders. He filled the yard with like scrap metal, and they lost their house because it was declared a fire trap, and Fred adamantly refused to clean it up. So the city took it away from them and then sold it on auction and gave them whatever money was left over minus the fines for all their violations. And Fred thought that was a great deal. We don't really need the house anymore, and now we get all this fucking money. You know, and I said, and so you got this money and you're homeless. You know, it's a tragedy. It's a weird comic tragedy. It's just a bizarre comic tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember John Wood complained about that. He's like, we're going to lose the house.
And recently, because of COVID, they were put into a luxury, because of our liberal state of New Jersey, they were put into a luxury hotel in Newark where they had a suite and with 2 separate bedrooms, 2 separate bathrooms, a kitchen, and a big screen TV with like 200 channels, but Fred blew it. John told me in panic before he went into his coma, Fred started hoarding scrap metal in the hotel room, and he started raiding. People were told in the hotel to leave their garbage outside of their door in these clear plastic bags. He was caught raiding people's garbage to take their aluminum cans out of it. And some irate woman who was there with her roommate called the cops. That's why John's alive today, because they said this crazy man that lives down the hall was raiding our garbage, and the cops went to knock on the door, and when they opened it, there was Fred looking like Doc Brown after a bad experiment, and there was John unconscious in the wheelchair, and I was told Fred admitted this. Somebody said, "Oh my God, he's got a dead guy in his place." They thought John was dead, the way he looked in the wheelchair, apparently. He must have looked terrible. And they told me at the hospital that he was literally hours away from death from pneumonia. The pneumonia was so bad. They really didn't think they were going to save him in the first night. But once again, he bounced back. They said the first couple of days, the nurse told me, we didn't think this man was going to make it. The doctor said right off the bat, he won't make it through the night. Now it's 13 days later, he's having his ups and downs, but like I said, he's still clinging on there. So let's hope for the best.
Well, you know, I'm staying optimistic no matter what. I'm a man of faith, and I'm always a perpetual optimist. But I do want to share probably one of the funnier points between John Franti and I. And it's one of those memories I'm going to always have, and I'm always going to cherish, because we all know when Franti gets excited about the guests and everything else. And so the long story short, this was just just after I came into the hot seat, opposite of Tom, and Franti had called me, and obviously we were joking because obviously with the time zone difference, being in Florida, so my phone rang at 1:30 in the morning. He's like, "Hey, did I wake you?" And I'm like, sort of, but that's okay. Is everything all right?" He's like, "No, I got to tell you some really cool news. You're not going to believe who's coming back to the show, John Link." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, John Link? David Peel band John Link?" He's like, no, the actor." And I'm like, "Yeah, that too, but from David Peel band?" He's like, "I think so, but John Link." I'm like, "Yeah, John Link. Same guy we're talking about." Awesome. This is going to be cool. I'm going to talk to somebody that I've got some of his movies. Like, I know, so do I. I'm like, "Yeah, cool. Can we talk about this more when I can wake up?" It's like, yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, that's what happens, because we have guests from coast to coast. And we do things at certain times, and all of a sudden you find out that, oh my God, I got to be on at 2 a.m. or whatever.
Good morning.
Yeah.
You guys, honestly, my phone beeped and it went black, and apparently I was disconnected from Block Talk Radio.
What the fuck happened there? Wait.
What do we have, 14 minutes left?
I think we're all still online right now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're still going back on, and they did say it appears you're calling into your show that's already in appearance, so welcome back to Blog Talk Radio.
Yay.
I can't fake the... Hey, I'm back!
This is a 2-hour show, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're still live. Right. And
William, I went up on
your story.
Well, it's 1 in the morning here. I got to call it quits. I got to somehow make it to work tomorrow. And then I got to make it to the driver tonight. Franti, now I'll tell my story quickly, another one, but then I wanted to ask you and the others. I mean, the way I met John Link, I was seeing him at long before I was acting, when I was an insurance salesman, which made me want to commit suicide. My marriage was falling apart. I was going to a lot of horror conventions, and I'd always see this weird little guy that looked like Charles Manson at every horror or Star Trek or comic book convention. And I'd said hello to him a few times, but this is just kind of bizarre that it was actually when I really got to know him was in 1999. I went to this convention, a chiller theater convention, and I went with a friend of mine who liked to collect underground movies, and he actually said his objective was that, and he was actually, even though he was pretty much a square, but yet he was into like bizarre art, and he wanted to get like, he said, "I want to find the most transgressive independent movies that are out there, the stuff that really seems to push the envelope." And so we picked up this movie by Pete Jackalone when I met Pete, called Duck, where Pete dared to do, in 1999, he dared to film a dark satire on the Columbine Massacre, the high school massacre shooting. And it was a notorious film. And then I saw a movie called, if anybody knows what I'm talking about, Newark, New Jersey, a movie called The Ironbound Vampire. Ironbound is a section of Newark, New Jersey, where it's like the Puerto Rican, you know, it's the Portuguese community in Newark. And I thought, this is great. A vampire from the Ironbound section of Newark. It's like the Sopranos meet Dracula. And so we picked that up. We picked up a number of these movies, and at the Chiller convention, we saw this weird little guy. And my friend said, look, there's a guy that looks just like Manson. And I'm like, yeah, I've seen him before over the years. I've talked to him. You've talked to him? I go, yeah, let's go talk to him. My friend was like, no, he looks like Manson. He's going to, like, pull a knife on us or something. And I said, no, I've talked to this guy. He's cool. And that's when I went up to him and I said, hey, you know, I've been seeing you over the years. He goes, yeah, I remember you. And I said, you know, you just seem like
you're doing great, John Lee.
But I said you seem like somebody I need to know. And this is before social media. I had email. I said, you got an email address or something? And he gave me his phone number and his email address. So I said, I live up in New Hampshire, but this was down in, I was getting divorced at the time, and I was separated from my wife, and she was up in New Hampshire, and I came back to live with my friend in Jersey, and I traded information with John, but then I returned to New Hampshire. We tried to reunite, but then John and I stayed in, but the thing, this is the punchline. My friend was like, you just gave that guy your phone number and your email address? I'm like, yeah, so I give my post office box, too. But then we went home to my friend's house when the convention was over, and he wanted to watch these really weird transgressive movies he picked up. And we were stupefied because John Link was in every one of them. We're like, look, it's that guy. He's in all these movies. You know, so that's when I contacted John and we started our communication long before I thought I was going to be an actor. I didn't start acting until 2005 and I moved away from New Hampshire in 07 and came back here to the New York, New Jersey area. But that's how I met John. He was this guy who was bizarre guy. I discovered he's in every movie we bought. He had at least some small part in it. But how did you encounter John Link and start producing his radio show?
Yeah.
Here's what's amazing to me, and I love the fact that John Link, JL, you're still here, and I love the fact that John Link said, I want to interview JL.
Yeah.
And I...
Whoa.
Are you still there?
I'm here.
Yep,
okay, I love the fact that he said that, and I think that's great because he remembers back to Francie and Friends, and it was supposed to be a joke show where, and 5 minutes talking on the phone with John Link, I said, nope, love this guy, not going to make fun of him from that other John. I love this guy, and I told him, I'm not going to make fun of this guy. I want to give him a serious interview, and JL, you were there right there with me, and you gave him a serious interview. And I think that's great. I love the fact that John Link, you were the person that he said he wants to interview. And, Edward, I'm going to go ahead and tell you this. I talked to John Link on occasions when we were able to connect, and I told him, I said, if there's one person that's always going to be by your side, it's going to be Edward. And he chuckled. He did that. I know.
She's right. She's right.
And believe me, there were times when I really wanted to strangle him for real.
But that's the beauty of you guys. You know, but I I always told John Link, you're always going to be the man that's always going to be by your side. And
well,
he did the
Godly that's what makes me doubly sad. We had a great comedy team. People were hiring us as a team. I want you to, like I said, I was like, it was like a Mutt and Jeff team, so to speak, you know. And of course, then Jeremy Woodworth recently, we started doing things together, making movies together. Jeremy Woodworth, who dresses up as Pogo the Clown. And we realized we had like a Three Stooges of horror thing going here. And even Jeremy couldn't make it today. We worked on a graveyard shift at a factory, but he's a great actor. But when we both acknowledge, it's like, you know, it's like we're losing one of the Stooges. What do we do? You know, and he's irreplaceable. It's like losing Curly. You know.
The thing is I was right, and who's by his side? You are.
Yeah, I got on, but he came to the hospital when I was all smashed up and in traction. I mean, you know, because I almost got killed in a car accident 6 years ago, the same hospital, and he came in to see me when I was like arm and leg were in a cast. It was in a horrible situation,
and
he was there for two
weeks. And now your ring finger is healing, hopefully.
Yeah, I don't know. It's I hope so. Like I said, I damn near chopped my finger off last week.
It's like you got sympathy pain.
No, it was just dumb luck. But I hope I don't lose the finger. It's that bad. It's like it was like nearly severed. They had to like stitch it back on.
And you're right there next to John, and I told John that. And, JL, I will tell you, the words from John Link's mouth, given into your ear, he loves you.
I wish I could take a picture because they cleaned him up. It's sad. The nurses told me, like I said, I hadn't seen him for 14 months. We talked on the phone frequently. But nobody had seen them because nobody was making movies. You know, in fact, only real guerrilla projects were being made because you couldn't rent out a studio with the COVID. And a lot of these movies, like we would import actors, but they wouldn't want to fly or they couldn't fly. But it's terrible what COVID did. But I hadn't seen John for 14 months. They told me at the hospital when they brought him in that he looked like Howard Hughes did at the end. They said he had long, long white hair and a huge white beard, and his fingernails were like coiled. They were like corkscrewed fingernails and toenails, and he was malnourished. They said he looked like Howard Hughes, but when I saw him, they'd cleaned him up. And what's interesting is they cut his hair kind of short, and he would always dye his hair. He was vain about getting old. But here he right now, if you could see him, I mean, they gave him a respectable haircut. He's got white hair, and even at his age of 74, not even a bald spot, full head of hair, you know, with his lousy diet, lousy nutrition, never taking care of himself. I'm like, damn, I never realized this guy's got like a perfect head of hair. and
I remember we had Melanie Robel who. She's not Robel now.
Yeah.
But
I hope she's happy.
And him and her were talking, and she's talking about hair products, and he's like, I got a couple of gnats in my hair. And she goes, oh, just condition it, John. You're going to be okay. That's the childlike honesty. Like John Link, he didn't hold and we're about to be cut off. But I will tell you from talking with John Link, and I got to tell you, I've been crying this whole show. I'm crying.
It's tough. It's a pity. I should have told you to play one of his favorite songs. John is a big fan of, believe it or not, Petula Clark. If you found a recording, we should have played Downtown.
Oh, I love that song.
I should have mentioned that to you. He's like Petunia Clark's biggest fan.
Hold on, I will see what I can do.
We're running out of time.
Okay, hold on. But let me just say, the last conversations I've had with John Link, Edward, I will tell you, John Link absolutely adores you. And
that doesn't always seem that way.
I know. That's what's cute about you guys. And I will also tell you, JL, he totally wanted to talk to you. And he loves you also.
I wished I'd mentioned Petulia Clark. You could have set that up. I forgot to mention that to you. Seriously, you got down?
Oh, wait. Wait.
20 pounds of toxic poop in their body at any given moment.
Oh, toxic
crazy, right?
Poop.
All that poop just sitting there rotting
all
away.
All that poop just sitting there rotting away. Okay, we're going to skip that. Can you hear it?
There it is.
Yes.
And we'll say, we love you, John.
When you're alone, the flash is making you lonely. You can always go.
Everybody, good
Uber
night.
Is loaded up with your favorites. What's your number one? Is it a double bacon cheeseburger or mahi-mahi tacos? All the foods you crave from the restaurants you love, all in one place. Tonight I'll be eating with Uber Eats. Order now. See Uber Eats.
Okay, that was an accident.
We got a commercial.
That was very interesting. I mean, we got the Downtown, we got it, and then the commercial. I pretty much feeling like I want to eat some hamburgers.
Well,
I don't know how that happened, but
when Francie was trying to love the song, we had some guy talking about toxic poop. I don't know what the hell that was.
I wanted, before I skipped the ad, I wanted to hear him say toxic poop again.
I'm thinking about having some burgers downtown.
That's a side of John Link. A lot of people don't know. I mean, he was a member of the Petulia Clark fan club when he was young.
That's nice. Yeah, my mom loved that song too.
All right, we're gonna sign off.
I wanna play one more song. This should be the closing song. We still do have Brett.
Yep.
We still have Edward.
Yep.
A final words for John Link before we play the closing song.
Francie, can I do a plug?
Yes.
I'm fine having their router.
I want to do a plug for Bald Head Radio. We will be back on the air as a podcast in late November. And I just want to put that out there, if that's cool to do so.
Yep, totally cool.
Get well, John. We'll hold an empty seat for you at the Chiller Theater Convention Halloween weekend. We'll keep a seat there for you just in case by some miracle you show up. And we'll have a big photo of you there. We'll have a big photo. You will still be at the Chiller Convention. We had a space for you, and Pete said he'd make a big poster of you and stick it in the chair.
Hey, Edward, would you be interested in being a guest on Bald Head Radio when we go back on the air?
Yes, I would, absolutely.
All right, so we'll get together through Francie with that information?
Yes, indeed, although I don't have a bald head, actually, but is that necessary?
You know, it's not necessary.
I've thought of shaving my head.
Bald Head Radio is all about being honest and naked and open.
I'll be there. You can count on it. I'll be there.
I would love to have you, sir.
Nick, would you like to say something for John Link?
Nick, come on, Nick.
I think he might be away from the phone. Nick!
I hear the phone. I forgot where I left it. Oh, there it is.
You know, Nick,
hey,
I've
I'm
known
here.
Nick since, I've
hey,
known
would
Nick
you
since
like to say a few closing words for John Link?
Well, if he's listened for Fedward, manages to keep all this in his ear for over 2 hours. I have said a lot of very meaningful stuff, but really, John, if you're listening, hang in there, wake up, get back to us, talk, and have more shows, more John Link shows. And we all love you. If you feel like you're not cared for, you are. You are. There's a lot more people than you think care about you. So, you know, you got to wake up, you got to get out of this, and you got to come back and talk to us. Say, hey, thank you guys for everything. I love you guys too. You know.
I actually put a request in at the hospital. I thought it might wake John up. I requested. I said I want a Catholic priest to come there and give him the last rites. And my friend Pete Jacqueline said, what are you doing that for? John's an atheist. I said, well, I figure he could use the blessings. And it might get him so mad.
I believe that's a good idea.
But it might get him so furious that he might wake up and start yelling at the priest.
Yeah, he might. That's a good idea.
So
and then if he says anything about it, you can say, I woke you up.
Have a priest perform an exorcism on him.
That could help too. That could help too. I'm so glad you found the time to talk.
Yeah, he'll
so
probably
quickly.
Wake up and go, "What the fuck is going on here?" Something like that. I'm not possessed. Get out of my room. Oh, hi, Ed.
Yeah. I hope. I mean, is there still a Francie and Friends show on Sunday nights? I lose track of these things.
Yes. We're going to have Charles Palasco. He is really big on the Titanic, and he is very smart. So wish me luck.
I've done a lot of research on the Titanic. I mean, unfortunately, the next 2 weekends I'm involved with conventions. You know, it's Halloween season. But I'd like to start calling in once, you know, Halloween and the election season is over. There's still even out here in Atlantic City a convention they're going to have at the Showboat Hotel, which doesn't have a casino anymore. They're doing it on November, 2 weeks after Halloween, I think the 13th and the 14th. And I'm going to go there because Beverly Randolph is there from Return of the Living Dead. And we've become very good friends over the years. We communicate all the time. In fact, she even emailed me and said she truly hopes she'll see me there. I will start to call your show. I hope I can call you with good news. I hope I can call you with good news.
I would love to hear good news. And I'm going to try and say this without crying because I'm not an emotional, mushy person.
Yeah.
But, you know, I called a lot of people last night, and even my mom, I told her, I was like, I hope I don't lose my friend.
Well, yeah,
John, you're my friend.
It's so unnecessary. That's what gets me is like John's 74, which is not really old this day and age, but I mean, this shouldn't have happened. It's one thing, like I said, my fiance Susie caught cancer. What are you going to do? Fate, but I mean, John was the fact that it's neglect is really upsetting me a lot. I gotta bring him back because this can't be his exit. He's gotta have a more cinematic exit.
Yeah, and I hope John hears this show, and I love you, John. I always say that to John, and then he says, all right, Francie, I love you too.
We all love him. And like I said, a totally unique persona. There's been nobody like him before or after. And some of the filmmakers who I've convinced to work with him, I've told them, I said, you're never going to find anybody like this. You've got to use John Link in your movie. Like I said, John Arecchio did with the Bigfoot Blood Trap movie, but he had to fire him before it was over. Pete's used him quite a few times. Pete Jacqueline used him early in his career, and then he stopped using him, kind of forgot about him. But I convinced Pete to use him again, and we got him to play Manson, you know, which was one of his dreams. Genevieve Rossi used him in her movie. He did a whole bunch of movies with someone before his stroke. He was in Genevieve Rossi's movie Attack of the Killer Chickens, where he plays the chicken boy. and Ted Mooring gave John usually plays a major supporting role in movies, but Ted Mooring, who's out in like the Harrisburg area of Pennsylvania, is the one filmmaker, and he's worked with John a lot. And he was crying on the phone when I called him. I called him from the hospital. And let him talk to John. But Ted Mooring gave John his one and only lead top billing role. He did a sequel to Bela Lugosi's film Devil Bat, called it Revenge of the Devil Bat. And John Link was playing Dr. Carruthers. That was Lugosi's character. He was playing Lugosi's grandson, Dr. Carruthers' grandson, trying to carry on his grandfather's like evil experiments to breed giant killer bats that will, you know, attack people on command. And so John has to, it just got released on DVD, Alpha Video, if you could find it. Revenge of the Devil Bat. It's the one, and I'm in it in an admirable supporting role as a befuddled deputy, with all of these people being found dead with their throats torn out. And we had a beautiful giant bat, a robotic bat. But John has the lead role in Revenge of the Devil Bat, and he's the chicken boy in Attack of the Killer Chickens, and he's Manson in The Killer Clown Meets the Candyman, and we played a comedy team of two dead resurrected soldiers and Mr. Blue Shirt, which should be coming out. But there's got to be more. There's got to be more movies. His career was really rolling. More radio shows, too.
Here's the thing. For us here on Francie and Friends, John Link has been a staple for many, many years. And his appearances on this show will never be forgotten. I just want to say we will miss him. Wow.
Nothing's
like
not gone
best.
Yet.
Yes, Sarah.
He's
no,
not,
we're
gone,
not
yet.
Gone yet. No, we're hanging on, and that's what the show's about. We're hanging on.
But as Clint Eastwood said in Unforgiven, we all got it coming. You know, and deserves, it's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, very true.
All
very
right.
True.
They're going to cut us off. There's one other song I really want to play for John Link. It is Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Oh, I like that song. John may not be familiar with it, but he will. He would like it if he could hear it.
All right.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Let's close it out with that.
And I'd give up forever to touch you, 'cause I know that you feel me somehow. You're the closest to heaven that I'll ever be, and I don't wanna go home. All I could taste is this moment, and all I can breathe is your life. And sooner or later it's over, I just don't want to miss you tonight. And I don't want the world to see me, 'cause I don't think that they'd understand. Everything's made to be broken.
Good night, everyone. I love you, John.
Good night.
Luke.
Good night, Johnny.
Love you.
Good night.
We all love you, John Link.
Wake up, John Link.
Agreed.
I'm going to sign off. I got to be at work tomorrow. But I'll let him listen to the show.
All right.
Yeah, it's late there. Okay, good night, everybody. Good night. No, good morning, John Link.
Wake up, John Link.
Jesus loves you, John, although you might not realize that.
That's what I said. Okay, I love you, John.